Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Reverend Guitars, and we are very happy about that because we really love Reverend. Well-built, affordable, unique, extremely cool, retro with modern sensibilities. Recently, we've had a Jetstream 390 and a Greg Koch Gristlemaster sent to us from Merchant City Music in Glasgow, and we've loved them both. The Jetstream is a gorgeous Reverend original jaggedly shaped retro offset with 3 specially voiced P90 pickups and a deliciously roasted maple neck. The Gristlemaster is an oversized T-style guitar with the incredible sounding Fishman Tele pickups, a Firebird style ramp, and a tonal palette so broad you'll never need another guitar. Seriously, their range is massive. Choose from a fantastic spread of bolt-ons, set necks, basses, and unique signature models. If you love guitars and you love this podcast, then I'm afraid you're going to need one. Check them out at reverendguitars.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good evening.
And Jay Cross.
Bad morning.
It is often a bad morning when you've been drinking as heavily as we all do.
All right, mate. Speak for yourself.
No, that's actually true. Just before we were podcasting, you guys spent the last 20 minutes talking about running and stuff.
We did.
You know, that was... I'll exercise at some point again in the future.
Hello welcome to the Running Nerds Podcast, the world's number one running nerds podcast.
Jogging. Do it while running?
That's a shout.
That's actually a great idea.
What about, I reckon, what's a triathlon if it's four? A quadrathlon? Quadrathlon. Yeah. We should do a quadrathlon.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
What's that?
Triathlon. Oh, no, because you can have a decathlon, can't you?
Like, decathlon's what, 10, but I've
what happens
got,
in that?
We don't have 7 mates, Matt. That's the problem.
Oh yeah.
We could. Well, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I guess we could. We could include Mark. I was tentatively including Mark, which is 4.
Occasional
we could,
of course, Mark.
We could get JD and Naomi. I mean, we could do a heptathlon or septathlon.
Septathlon would be
sept.
7.
Is that 7? I mean,
let's do it.
My Latin is not quite. Sept is 7. Wait, no, there's 6, isn't it? So that's heptathlon.
I don't know. This week on
How is hept is also 7? What's the 6-sided?
Welcome to the Latin podcast, the world's worst Latin podcast.
Heptagon. Did I say hept? No, that's still heptagon. That's still 7. Hexagon. A hexagon is 6.
Absolutely.
Everybody, don't panic. I looked it up on the internet.
Well, I'm only sorry you didn't do that earlier.
A hexathlon. So, right, here's what we're going to do. A hexathlon. Clearly, either me or Matty will have to run. So maybe, Matty, you run. Maybe I'll cycle. Mark can climb whilst podcasting. Joe What's your favourite Olympic sport?
I can drink or, you know, I could consume anything, really. It doesn't matter. I don't matter.
Consume anything.
You can be the consumer of planets.
The Joey Chestnut of the guitar nerds community.
Joey Chestnut.
You could speed eat whilst podcasting. Oh, that's awful.
No, that would be great. That'd be great. Now, this week on the Guitar Nerds podcast, we're actually doing a bit of a question special. News has been a little bit light this week, well, as in there's no, you know, nothing really of any import. It is, yes. Nothing really of any import. But we have had some absolutely fantastic questions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group.
I mean, you say absolutely fantastic.
/groups/Guitar Nerds forum. Some of them are rather good.
The ones that you have like filled in with fake people and fake questions, those are quite good.
Who's what about this Mark Packham?
Yeah.
I don't trust him.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yeah.
That is not a question. But before we listen to the dulcet tones of the question duck and then answer the questions, Matt Knight, you stuck some pictures up on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. This week about a new pedal board. Actually, before I even get into that, I'd just like to welcome our new Patreon supporters for this week.
It's one of them, my pedal board.
Welcome
to become self-aware and subscribe to the Patreon.
Welcome to Skynet, who has joined us. yes, welcome to Stephen O'Loughlin, who joins us, and also to Gerald Pratt. Thank you very much.
Couple of legends right there.
Thank you, Joe.
Where are we at? What's going on?
We're about the same. We sort of lost as many as we gained this month, I'm afraid. So we're still sort of we're still almost Indiana Jones and the Lost Crusade. I can almost
the best one
touch it, Dad, wherever he says. Ooh, I don't think it's that. I can almost reach it, Dad. That's what he says. Yes.
You okay, Joe?
Yes, absolutely fine. Absolutely fine.
Are you upset about Sean Connery? Is that what that was about?
I tell you what, I did. Actually, the night before the morning that we heard the sad news of the passing of Sean Connery, Emma and I were watching The Devil All of the Time, which is a Tom Holland and Robert Pattinson movie.
The new one. Is that
a new
movie?
Yes, we got about halfway through, and I'm afraid...
No spoilers.
No, I just don't like those sorts of films, and I was whining, and Emma finally gave in to me and let me stop the movie and let me pick a movie, and I picked.
What did you pick? Did you
the
pick
Last
the
Crusade?
New Borat movie? No. I bet you picked up the new Borat movie.
No, I don't really especially like a lot of new cinema. I like watching the films that we grew up on.
Weren't born in the 70s, mate.
True,
so,
true.
You know,
but I made her watch The Last Crusade for the umpteenth time. But I absolutely love that film. Everything about that movie is wonderful.
So good.
It is a fantastic movie. But actually, you know, speaking of mod mode, Matt, we've started to put together the first few bits and bobs for a series we'll be launching in the new year, which I'm tentatively calling the Great British Build Off, or something like that.
Why?
Because me and Matt are going to, because it's a play on the Bake Off, and me and Matt are going to build pedal boards. We're going to be setting ourselves each a budget and a few rules, ground rules and limitations. Then me and Matt are going to each build a board, and we're going to record a podcast about the building process and then I guess we will ultimately demonstrate what our board can do to our listeners, and they can.
Is it going
to
be
like who
that,
wins?
Is it going to be like that episode of Top Gear with the Hilux? You're going to like throw it off a building and stuff. It's like, oh look, well mine survived. Matty with his 14 Boss pedals on his Schmitt Array board. Yeah. It's like, yeah, well look, I actually took this to the bottom of the ocean with James Cameron, and the TU3 still turns on.
There you go. Now, we have actually selected our board. That was the first thing that me and Matt have done in this series. We're each getting Alder and Ash Journeyman. We're going to get a pair of those.
Take us on the journey,
great.
Man.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. We've just got to choose our woods and Tolexes and we'll be good to go. But that's going to be exciting. Anyway, so speaking of pedal boards,
I want to hear. I want to hear more about this. Sorry, maybe you have been talking about this in our chat, and I've just ignored it.
No. Me and Matt had a call about this separately.
So what's the deal then? What are you doing? You're doing like choosing a handful of a couple of drives each, a reverb, delay, etc., etc. Or
I guess
is it
so.
A bit more laissez-faire than that.
We're still kind of in the process of putting together exactly what our ground rules will be. Mm-hmm. But I think, Matt, you had some ideas about that, Matt, didn't you? I think yes, there has to be, like, we shouldn't just build a board with, you know, whatever, 8 reverbs on it, and then at the end make a ridiculous noise and be like, there you go, my board's better. Because that seems sort of unfair. Because, of course, you know, there's going to be like a demonstration at the end, and I imagine we could just fill it with crazy pedals and make the weirdest noise and probably win, which seems a bit unfair. So I guess we will set ourselves ground rules of making it quite a functional board, as well as being able to do crazy stuff. But I think, yes, we should probably set ourselves,
yeah,
you know.
What did we say? We said we won't put a limit on the total cost of the pedals on the board. You know, if we want to fork out for a Klon, put it on there. But on the same thing, we're like, well, then you could just buy a bunch of vintage stuff, and then it makes it less appealing to the people that listen to this podcast who might hear the sound of something and go, oh, that sounds really good, and I can't buy it. So I think we said one of the rules would be it can only be products that are available to buy right now.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite a good one. Well, it does mean that half the stuff that I've got can't use because I've got loads of vintage Boss pedals. But I don't know. I don't know if anyone listening to the podcast might have a couple of good ideas for rules. But
I reckon one pedal per brand.
Yeah, Matt suggested something like that, actually. Didn't you already suggest that, Matt?
Did I suggest that one? Maybe I did.
A brand limit. I think it is a good idea, Jay. I had thought about, like, should we make it all, because we're going to Alder and Ash, I was like, should we make it all British brands? But then I was like, no, there's too many awesome brands out there that I would not want to exclude, whilst I think British brands are going to play a strong part on my pedal board. You know, I'd hate to lose the opportunity to have some of the, you know, really interesting companies that we found out recently, like Jackson Audio and things like that. I think
one pedal per brand is a good one.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, yeah, trying to track down new stuff. And then I think we said that it has, there's some types of effects that you have to have at least one of on there. So I think, you know, there has to be one make gooder.
Yeah.
I think there has to be something that does something weird.
Yeah.
We have to have at least one.
One modulation.
At least one
modulation, because, of course, you know, I imagine
a limit of one modulation. I think that's a good
job. How many pedals can you fit on a Journeyman, Matt? Do you know?
I think 8 to 10 Boss pedals, I want to say.
Mm.
Maybe a bit more.
Okay.
But there's loads of great stuff out there. But I think it would be good if there were some rules maybe set by some of the group, maybe Jay, maybe Mark, and then we'll see what we come out with.
Yeah.
Community rules, I like that.
Community rules. And then we'll put it to a vote. Yeah, we'll do a podcast on it every week, or we'll do a couple talking about our choices, and then I guess we'll demo it and put it to a little vote and see
how many points Matt wins by.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where I was going with that.
I see. Very well. Very well. Well, you know, speaking of pedals, Matt, you uploaded onto the Facebook group was it a new pedal board, or have you just got something else up and running? It looks absolutely
gorgeous.
Oh
yeah, no, just got something, you know, just another one in the loft. You know, my loft is actually a gear storage facility. I think when we finally convert our loft, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to need a new home.
I think you should just build a roof box, move everything up there.
What, like the ones you put on top of cars?
Exactly.
Just get loads
one
of those.
For a house. Yeah.
Because there is about 7 flight cases up there at the moment. It's definitely going to need to find somewhere for those. It was my custom pedal boards. ES8 case, which I've had for ages, and I just wanted to put a board. I've got so many great pedals through lockdown, a few wins, a few losses, a few things I've not been entirely happy with, and I spent weeks just A being like different types of pedal. I was like, here's all my fuzz pedals. I'm going to like play them all and see which ones I like best. And I was like, pick one. It's like, right, now I need a boost pedal. And I was like, try all the different boost pedals. And then I can't, well, do those two work together? To finally try and actually nail a combination of pedals that I wouldn't want to change within like a week. Because obviously the amount of time it takes to put things together when you have to then dismantle it, it's very, you know, it's a very sad time,
yeah,
dismantling a pedal board.
What did you go for fuzz wise?
The Dandrive secret weapon, which some people might remember, I posted, it's all pink with the pink circuit board, basically like a germanium. I think it's based off an old pedal called the Zonk Machine, which is basically a germanium fuzz, but with a tiny bit of octave up, just a hair, just so you can, you sort of get that kind of weird sort of intermodulating sort of fuzz harmonics when you like bend two notes and stuff like that.
Oh, lovely.
But very responsive to the volume control, which is great. And then a Boss FZ2 Hyper Fuzz, which I just couldn't...
You love that thing.
It's just so good. It's just so good. You know, and I use it in the kind of super fuzz, like octave up kind of setting. The other fuzz is instantly famous as the sound of Electric Wizard, the Doom band, because it is just like just meaty. so yeah, I use that, and then stuck with the Dane for the dried stuff.
Love
Dane.
Some real usual suspects on this board for you. I think your board is quite a good overview of pedals that you always talk about.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the big one that I finally got on a board, and it's been in a couple of boards a few times, but you know, I keep putting it on a small board and then go, I wish it was on my main pedal board, is my Deluxe Memory Man.
Yeah.
Which just,
wicked pedal.
It just sounds so good. It's one of the early 90s reissue ones. And it just sounds so good. I just recently had it recalibrated again. But I've run it with a Gig Rig Wetterbox, and that for a couple of reasons. So the Wetterbox is basically a two loop switcher that's then got a control that blends between loop A or loop B, so a bit like an LS2 kind of vibe.
I see.
But the big thing about it is, it if you run a pedal in loop B, it's got trails, which the Deluxe Memory Man doesn't have. So you can get all these like really nice ethereal, like turn the feedback up and it's just on the edge of oscillation. But then as soon as you hit the foot switch, everything cuts dead, which is obviously a bit of a shame. And obviously, ES8 does have like a carryover feature that allows the trails to go. But I don't like, one, hitting the foot switch on the Deluxe Memory Man, because old Electro-Harmonics pedals are a tad breaky. but also, it allows, it's actually got a bit of a minor volume drop, and you can adjust that volume drop with the Wetterbox. So it just gives a bit of a clearer signal for... For the Memory Man, Revival Trem, which I'm using as a bit
you
of a
absolutely love that.
That pedal is
the minute
so good.
I sent that to you, the Origin Effects Revival Trem.
I don't
half
know
half drive, half
yeah,
tremolo.
half Trem. I don't know if Jay or Mark managed to. I don't know if we had it Gear of the Year or not. I think it was came out at NAMM this year, so I think it's absolutely one of my top choices for Gear of the Year this year. All analog drive based on a Tweed Fender. No, Tweed Fender? No, Brown Face Deluxe, I think. It just sounds amazing, super responsive, but it's got a proper bias tremolo in it. So, you know, that's just wicked. Grouter Vibe, which I talked about before, best vibe pedal I've tried. I've got the Deep Oggin on there, the Thorpey.
Oh, so you've got two Thorpeys on there.
I have, yeah. For that, the Oggin for that CE1 type vibe, which we were talking about a couple of weeks ago.
Last week, yeah.
Was it last week? God, how time flies. And then I've got the MXR Phase 95 under the tier, so no one knows that I've got a mini pedal on my pedal board as well. And I started doing this a couple of board builds ago, but only discovered the real benefits of it recently. I've run the H9 in... It's got like a pre-post... mode.
The Eventide H9.
So, you know, like, there's some pedals out there like the Strymon Mobius. It's got stereo in, stereo out, but you can run a distortion pedal in one of the loops, so you can have a phaser before or after the drive.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing with the H9. So I run one half at the beginning of the board and one half at the end of the board. So basically the entire pedal board runs in the loop of the H9. So that means that you can have synth sounds or, you know, various different modulations or whatever at the beginning of your pedal board, and then all the reverbs and stuff can come at the end of it.
Four cabling.
That's quite nice.
Yeah, four cabling with one pedal board. It's bloody brilliant. And then I spent most of Sunday playing guitar, where I discovered a synth sound on the H9 and then was running that into the Mood and the Deluxe Memory Man. And I'm sure my neighbours were really pleased with me constantly swelling in an open E note and it going,
so
for
what are
ages.
What are you using for reverb then? The H9 is your sole sort of reverb
using that
source.
For reverb. It's so, the algorithms in that are so good. I mean, there's other dedicated reverb pedals out there, and I've been messing around. I've got an RV6 here, which I've been messing around with a little bit. And I've got the Minim as well, which is really good. The Minim does a lot of the extreme
stuff. The Old Blood
stuff.
Noise Endeavors Minim.
Yes. It does a lot of the more extreme stuff, like the big reverbs. But I wanted something that did that, but also some of the more subtle stuff as well, like the springs and the plates. But then I also use the Mood for a lot of that. Because the Mood does some big reverb sounds, use the expression pedal to change the clock speed and get some sort of Eno-esque
and
ambience.
Is that the expression pedal you're using is the Old Blood Noise Endeavors, the expression slider, right?
Yeah, which is, they're wicked. For I think they're $39.
Yeah.
What a cool way to add some expression to your pedal board.
They look cool as well, which is really important.
That'd be very cool in an RE20. Because, Jay, you were asking me about your RE20. I was like, that would be cool, because that's how you change the speed in real time. A little expression slider.
This week, Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Chox, the Danish power supply wizards who have been specialising in power supplies for effects pedals since 1991. Chox is proud to announce that the modular Future Power Generation range of power supplies is now available everywhere. Chox Future Power Generation range consists of the DC7, which is the main unit, plus the Chox 4 expander kit and the Chox 8 expander kit and the standalone Chox 4 adapter kit. Each of these power supplies offer a groundbreaking 1-inch profile, ultra low noise achieved by multi-stage filtering, 660 milliamps at 9 volts DC in each outlet, 4 selectable voltages, and each product comes with a large selection of flex cables included. Plus, much more, and Chox power supplies are covered by a 5-year worldwide warranty. If you've got a smallish board you'd like to power via an adapter, Chox 4 adapter kit is the way to go. Got a medium-sized pedal board with some power-hungry pedals on it? Well, the DC7 is the answer. The DC7 will also charge your phone via the built-in USB outlet, so you won't miss any important messages from your hungry fans. Got a large pedal board? The DC7 and Chox 4 expander is what you need. Got a huge pedal board and need enough juice to power a small village? Get a DC7, connect it to the Chox 8 expander. Visit Chox at CIOKS.com for more info. Now, back to the show.
Just like the Ibanez Echo Shifter.
Oh, what a great pedal that was.
Great pedal. Fantastic.
I can't believe they ever discontinued it. I know they've reintroduced it to their range now, but
they only discontinued it. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but my understanding was they discontinued it because they changed the wood paneling.
Okay.
That was something that I think you said, Matt, because didn't you talk to someone, was it like Joe Bonamassa's Guitar Tech or something? And they were saying that anytime they see one of those original ones, they buy it because it's like...
I definitely remember hearing that from someone.
I can't remember.
It was such an unusual company to turn up with like a slider-based vintage delay, you know?
I guess so. But, you know, Ibanez have got a lot of history and a lot of prestige with pedals. And,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of innovation over the years. Even... well, a couple of years before that, you know, you've got the big airplane flanger, which is like...
I'm still trying to get one of those.
What on earth was that, obviously?
But interesting that they never made it a range. You know, the slider control on that was obviously did lend itself very much to delay as an effect. But it was such an interesting chassis and such a unique way of controlling the effect. It's just...
True, to me
that they didn't end up doing a reverb and a drive and a few other things with the same control layout.
At the same time, I mean, it was clearly designed to have the kind of look and feel of an RE201 or, you know, like a proper Space Echo. Yeah. And, you know, you don't get a DR201. You know, Roland never made a DR201 or a CH201. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are some things that just work with that style a lot better. And I do think the delay is one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that pedal. I think that is an absolute banger. But as Matt says, I've been spending a bit of time with my 201 this week, with my RE20 this week, just trying a few different things. I'd never actually plugged an expression pedal into it. And rather than read the manual, I decided to, you know, text Matt, which is what I assume everybody does when they've got a problem.
Oh yeah, I know, I am a
manual.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you have to assign it, which is something that was just like, okay, this is getting a bit beyond me, I've got to be honest. I'll just leave it. No, but I did, I got it all sorted out, and yeah, sounds good. And it's still just the bloody best. I think the RE20, I love it. It's live long and prosper.
I must admit that would be the one pedal that I would swap out the Deluxe Memory Man for. Would be that. I mean, I sort of don't have to because, you know, I've got a real 201 here, so
you could have
both my pedal board.
I'm still not convinced anything's ever been better than the RE20, you know, like just as a functional ambience pedal.
I think in terms of recreating a 201, I definitely don't think anything's ever come as close. I mean, there's some great models in other
people
pedals.
Love the L cap. And, you know, I think...
In fairness, I've never tried the L-cap, so...
It's great, but, like, it's not an RE20, is it? You know, I don't know.
I think the price of an RE20 works in its favour as well, as opposed to, you know, a Strymon sort of price point.
Yeah.
The pedal I'm super... Talking of ambience machines and that sort of stuff, the pedal I am super keen on trying, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, is this new Chase Bliss Automatone CXM 1978, which is their reverb version of the the Automatone is their sliding fader pedal. But talking
this
of
is
faders,
the £750 reverb
pedal.
Oh
no, pedal. No. The Automatone Benson preamp is £750. The Automatone CXM 1978, which is the Chase Bliss Meris collaboration, is £899. We have entered a new realm.
Oh, I'm excited about it.
This thing's wicked though. It's based on an old Lexicon rack unit, I think. It just looks like a machine. Bass and mids for the reverb time, crossover, treble, mix, pre-delay, and then you've got a bunch of other little features you can add in. It just sounds glorious.
And what, like 5 presets?
I think you can have... I don't know how many presets.
Or are there banks as well?
No, well, there's MIDI, so I'm guessing presets probably go up to like 128, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's super expensive.
Yeah.
Super expensive.
Yeah,
I would...
It's a big old chunk.
Yeah, I would be tempted, I must admit. But, I don't know. It's one of those things that I probably should try it before taking the risk. But then again, you probably know it's going to sound good. I haven't seen too many demos on it. I thought the Benson preamp one sounded cool, but I'm like, I'm just not going to get that much. For me, and I realize I've got more drives than most other types of pedal in my collection, I just like it to do one thing and one thing really well, and then I just like to leave it. Whereas like modulation to reverbs, I like to have loads of different things. So the Benson preamp for me was just like, I just wouldn't use the sliders or the presets and stuff like this one. I'm like, oh, this could be very
especially
cool.
If there are there's like trails ramping between the when you're like if you switch presets and you get some extreme changes on like the time or whatever, and if it's going like, I mean, you know, I'd pay anything for that. That sounds great.
Yeah, especially when you get to watch a little slider go up and down at the same time. To do that, I think that's quite cool. All automated. I mean, it's definitely like the next level in guitar pedal development, which I think is, yeah, I think it's great.
I guess the first thing to hit that price point that's not vintage, I guess.
Yeah, when it comes to rack. Well, I suppose. Yeah.
If we're not talking about multi effects,
well, yeah, or like a Helix or whatever.
Yeah. I think there's probably maybe a few odd boutique pedals potentially. There's a vintage company called Shinai. Obviously they made the original Univibe. I saw someone demoing their new, what they're calling the Hendrix in a Box, which is the psychedelic machine. So based off an old pedal which I think was also called, I think it was called the Honey in about 1966, I think, which was basically fuzz, Univibe and octave up all in one box. Sounds amazing. And they've just reissued it. Unfortunately, their website is terrible. But that's $12.99. But then does it count? Because it's three effects in one.
Yes, technically a multi-effect. But,
but very cool. What was cool about this, though, is it's three pedals in one, but each pedal has its own in and out, so you can reorder the pedals or you can insert other pedals into the chain, which I think is quite a nice little...
Very nice
little touch. Yeah. But yeah, we are definitely entering a new world, as it were.
Yes, I guess we are. A new world of very, very expensive pedals. I wonder if things will get expensive enough for me to sort of, you know, think they're too expensive. I tend to sort of fall on that. I tend to get a bit snobby with that stuff and think that expensive stuff is always better. But we'll see. Anyway, we should dive head first into some questions, because I can hear the question duck there in the distance. There he is. Absolutely. So we're gonna take a load of questions from the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum. First of all, Cass Jones asks, what is the best reverb pedal out there for good old Fender amp style reverb? I don't need all the Strymon bells and whistles.
Ah, so you don't need an £899.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I've got an answer. One pedal that springs to mind, which you can't buy anymore, and I would definitely, and we're talking about prices.
I know exactly what you're
the
gonna say.
Boss, FRV1, which fantastic is the pedal. The Fender, there was the collaboration with Fender based on their 63 spring reverb. Sounds amazing. You know, just like we were talking about the RE201, the RE20 being the best 201. This is the best, closest thing I think you'll get to the 63 spring reverb tank without having a spring reverb. Unfortunately, they are discontinued. Since discontinuation, they have ramped up in price. An average you're looking at now is somewhere between 150 and 170. But if you're looking for a reverb pedal to do that one specific thing, then that is a very, very good choice, in my opinion.
Mm, absolutely. Jay Cross, what do you think? Because, you know, I have actually been really impressed with the Fender reverbs. There are like three reverbs, I think, in the Fender catalogue at the moment. The reflecting pool.
And then there's the Treverb delay.
Yeah, and then there's the Treverb and the... Oh, this was a question in the quiz a few weeks ago, wasn't it? Yeah,
it was, yeah, the Marine Layer. And actually, there's a new one, which is the Dual Marine Layer, which is was announced in the summer and just started shipping. But for me, I mean, my favourite of all of those is the Treverb. They're all good if depending on what it is that you want to do. But for me, the Treverb is just... it's just fantastic. You know, it's the kind of Fender effects section of a deluxe in a box, you know, so you've got reverb on one side and you've got trem on the other side, which is...
I thought the Marine Layer was the one that did all the sort of plate stuff.
Well, so the it depends what you're doing, because the marine layer has got three different reverbs on it. But so does the, so that's got plate, hall, and room, hall, and then special. And then each of those has got three, I think, different sections. So there's nine different algorithms within the pedal. But for me, the treverb is the one. So you've just got three reverbs. So you've got 63, 65 and plate. And yeah, just, it just sounds so good. And then the other side, you've got the tremolo, and I absolutely love the harmonic trem on that side. So yeah, that for me is really good. But you know, there is a few extra bits and pieces on that. If you're just after like kind of a just a straight reverb, just with nothing else, I mean, my kind of go-to was always the Hall of Fame, and I still think it's great, but
it's very good, and it's not a lot of money either.
Well, it's not a lot of money, but there is a lot of bells and whistles on it. And actually, you know, I think back to having this question when we worked in the shop, people coming in and saying like, look, I don't want anything fancy. I just want a reverb pedal. I just want to turn my reverb pedal on and for it to be reverb. I don't want 10 different options. And at the time, the Hall of Fame was always my kind of go-to. And that was intimidating for a lot of people because it did have a lot of stuff on it. At that point, I think it's difficult to look past like the Holy Grail. I think the Holy Grail is still a fantastic
great
pedal.
And
if all you want to do is just have something that's just really straightforward, you know, like you say, the Marine Layer is great, but there's still a few extra bits and pieces on there. If you just want something that's just a really easy reverb pedal and you turn it on and it's like, oh yeah, there's reverb. Holy Grail, this, you know, there's a reason why it has barely changed in, I don't know, whenever that was released, 20, 25 years ago?
No, I think, maybe even longer.
Yeah, I actually have no idea.
I've never had one on a board of mine. You know, I don't think I'd even sort of recognise the, you know, any of its standard tones if I heard them. I don't think I've ever really sat down with a Hall of Fame.
Just sounds like a spring tank.
Exactly.
I mean, the Flurb is pretty unique.
Yeah, I guess you've got to make sure that you don't click on that one. I had a Holier Grail for a while, which is like the massive old big box type, which I trod on too hard and put my foot through, and then it broke. I don't know where that went, actually. I just in the bin.
I'm also trying to understand what the difference is between... There's a Holy Grail. So now you can buy a Holy Grail Nano and you can buy a Holy Grail Neo.
Neo's the smaller one.
No, they're the same size because they both come in the same box now. But the Neo is Spring Hall Plate and the Holy Grail is the classic Spring Hall Flurb.
Oh, so the Neo is maybe the... That was the Holy... Maybe those are the Holy Grail Plus. Yeah, because... No, what? Which one? Because when there was the Holy Grail and the Holy Grail Plus, I think. Yeah. Holy Grail.
It's time for the Electro-Harmonics Hour.
Yeah.
No, right, okay. So let me quickly okay. See if I can summarize this. So Holy Grail Plus has three controls. So you go between Spring Hall and Flurb.
Yeah.
You have an amount control and a blend control.
Okay.
The down from that is the Holy Grail, which
why
just
do you
has...
need amount and blend?
Wait, so what was the first one? The first one was the
Holy Grail Plus.
Plus, that's the plus.
Jay, the reason you would need amount and blend is if you want to have a really high reverb decay, but obviously have it low in the mix.
Which
is what I do on my
That's fair. That makes sense. Yeah.
And then you've got the Holy Grail, which is the standard one, the Holy Grail Nano, which is Spring Hall and Flurb with just a reverb amount control. You then have the Holy Grail Neo, same box, same controls, except you have a plate instead of a flurb. Flurb. And then up from that, you have the Holy Grail Max, which has all four algorithms in it, so and has the blend and time control.
So what was the flurb?
A flurb is a flanger and a reverb.
Yeah, so the reverb was flanged.
Flanged.
Right.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile.
From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And actually looking on...
Sorry. Hang on one sec. Joe?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Why?
I'm just going to say it again. The reverb was flanged. I don't understand you just saying like, right, yeah, okay, fine, next point, move on. Yeah. That's the sort of thing that normally makes you fall off your chair.
I mean, that's definitely cool. Can you affect the speed of the flange?
No, it's predetermined.
It's predetermined. What makes you think you know better? Come on.
Because I want my flange to be really slow. I like flange to sound like someone's just, you know, pressing their finger against the tape a little bit, you know.
Yeah, okay.
I like
right, George Martin. Calm down.
That organic flangey sound.
There is, I tell you what, it's amazing how far we've come in terms of reverb pedals, considering the old GAC days. Just on a on Anderson's website, just went to reverb pedal.
Who?
Anderson's. First 24 reverbs. I set the price from low to high. Starts at $899. Cheapest one, $269. Wow. That's the first 24 reverb pedals at the highest price. I mean, some of the stuff you've got here, obviously the Chase Bliss, which we've talked about, the new Night Sky, the Death by Audio Rooms. The one pedal we haven't talked about a lot, probably since it came out, was the Seymour Duncan Dark Sun, which was their digital delay and reverb. But you've got, the Ventris, the Chase Bliss Dark World, the Source Audio Super Collider, the Meris, loads of stuff. But there's a whole bunch of...
Oh, the Mercury 7. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. But actually, one thing... Well, yeah, obviously, we talked about the Flint. But there's loads of pedals on here that cover this question. Basically, what's the most springiest spring? And there's actually there's a pedal by Source Audio called the True Spring.
Well, what about Anasound? Anasound did an actual spring with their Element, it was called, I think.
Yeah, so there's loads out there. For my money, like I said, FRV1. But if it's something that you need to buy right now, I think Jay's choice of Holy Grail is pretty damn good.
Not a bad choice. You know, the pedal that actually probably, the reverb pedal that was on my baseboard for the longest amount of time of any reverb pedal was the Hall of Fame Mini, the Hoff. Which was just all you had was, I think, the effect level control, and everything else was predetermined. It was actually very good.
Was it predetermined, or was it you set it in the tone print?
Tone print. Yes, you could absolutely set it up on that. I never did. I never plugged it into anything. It just went straight on my board. Had the
Isn't
level
that though
set.
Because you already had your own signature sound? You're just like, yeah, that's the one for me.
I have my own signature vibrato sound.
I thought you said you hacked it, didn't you? That was you that posted that article on the dark web, I thought.
Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I did. But I always thought that was a really good sort of functional, simple reverb sound. You know, oddly enough, I hardly own any reverb pedals, even though I absolutely love playing very reverb intensive guitar at home, but I do it, you know, almost exclusively through the reverb on the Blues Junior, or you know, I was using the 63 spring reverb setting on the Helix, or now using the GT1000 core, just using their simple spring reverb on there. I don't actually use any dedicated pedals, weirdly enough, but.
This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergold Guitars. Be your own original.
But yes, I don't know, organic, nothing for me. You know, a few weeks ago, I was recording this record with my girlfriend Emma, and I had to record in some very reverb heavy guitar. And the first thing I did was, you know, to be simple, I just ran it straight into the into my interface, and I used. Just plugins, just an amp plugin and a nice reverb plugin, and I was like, it sounds a little bit flat, for me. So I was like, well, I'll try and, you know, maybe I'll try something else. And this was shortly before I got the GT1000 core, so I was like, well, I'll try the Helix has some fantastic reverbs on there. I'll do that. So I went direct in, and I was still like. It sounds fine, but it's not. I didn't feel it wasn't sounding as the reverb wasn't as dynamic as I wanted it to be, and I ended up miking up the Blues Junior with mm-hmm. just the reverb absolutely cranked, and it sounded just completely wonderful. Mm. And I thought I found at the time, this was like I said, like weeks ago, maybe over a month ago, and I was too sort of in it. I was too close to the record, so I had to sort of. Put it down and, you know, come back to it later. And as it happened, we wrote a load of other stuff, and I only came back to it last week and listened to all the guitar takes I had in the different versions, and I was like, wow, like, for all the fantastic plugins and wonderful digital amp sims, an SM57 up against a, you know, a maxed out reverb tank on a Blues Junior, which was like, I was playing it far too loudly for, you know, for living in a, you know, a house with a next door neighbor. It just sounded absolutely incredible. And for recording, I'm such a complete digital convert. I was surprised to find, I was like, oh, even with not a great miking situation, like a 57 doesn't really do the best job for recording. You just can't top a. You can't stop real Fender reverb, you know. Still sounds the best.
It's just made me just quickly look up that one of the amps that I've lusted after for a while, which I thought was always dead cool, is the Supro 1605R.
Oh yeah,
which is their little 5-watt 1x8. I think they also do it in a head version as well, but it's got a reverb out, so you can. You can record, so it's basically a dry out, a reverb out, and a mix out. So if you just want to record the spring sound separately to the drive sound,
Ooh. You
can, which I thought,
yeah, I like that.
It's very cool. So the wet output provides 100% wet reverb signal, and then the dry is 100% dry. So you can mix them out when recording. But I thought that was very, very cool. Not enough places seem to stock Supro. We should definitely try and get some of those
fantastic
amps.
Wonderful looking amps as well, which is wonderful looking amps for if you want an amp for your front room, you know, to noodle around on, which I think in the current circumstances is becoming more and more important. Like a good looking amplifier that's going to work in your lounge.
Yeah,
you know, it
matters
a little bit more than it did, and I think Supro are a wonderful brand for that. That sort of that like vintage TV style amp front, I think, is lovely. They're very cool. We do actually have a question about sort of little amps like that. Kat Stearman says, we've got some other questions to answer before this, but let's go ahead to this one right now. Kat Stearman says, what are the best small rigs for home? 1 watt and 5 watt type amp suggestions?
I'm guessing he wants to go specifically for valve amps.
Well, I mean, I guess so, if you're saying 1 watt or 5 watt, but you know, that's kind of neither here nor there. I mean, who cares how you power an amp? It's how it sounds, right? So it's
let's talk about
So let's talk about what amps. If you're looking for something, a small rig for home, then I would presume, you know, we're not talking about recording, we're talking about plugging in your favorite guitar in your living room and, you know, and it sounding good. It actually sounded good. So let's talk about digital stuff as well as solid state stuff or valve 1 watt and 5 watt stuff. I think some of that is very good. Matt Knight, what do you reckon?
The problem I've found with 1 or 5 watt valve amps is they do sound, obviously, like 5 watts is still pretty loud. 1 watt to me just doesn't give you enough headroom. I almost see it as a bit pointless for a valve amp,
if you want to drive it, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you want to drive it, but then if you want to put things in front of it, I think if you're just noodling around at home, for me, I always want an amp that I can dial in pretty much anything and then not have to worry about
Sure.
And one amp that I've been currently re-enjoying, which I've had for ages, but it sits under my desk, and every now and then I'll plug into it if I. You know, it's the working day, and obviously Amy, my partner, works in the other room, so I can't really crank things during the day. But the Roland Microcube GX, portable Diddy.
So not what I expected you to say.
I mean, I could have said Katana, but obviously,
I mean, I thought you were going to go for like the little jazz chorus.
No, honestly, because I'm thinking that he wants, if he's talking 1-5, wants a small little combo, great for playing at home, bunch of different sounds in. And when this is all over, can take it down the park and have a little jam.
Down the pub.
Down the pub with a pint. Left the amp at home. Don't need that. But actually, yeah. It is portable. It does come with a little strap. So you could have it with you if you wanted. But actually, no, we laugh. But I actually think absolutely great. Loads of different amp models. A few different effects. An auxiliary in if you want to play along to some backing tracks. And actually, it has one feature I totally forgot about. Has a the iCube link, which basically you plug it in with a little cable which comes with it and allows you to integrate with a iPhone app, which is totally free, and you can record straight onto your phone. So if you're
tight,
sort of jamming around and coming up with ideas and you go, oh, that's really cool, you plug this little cable in with your phone, play along, record it straight into your phone. I thought that was really cool. For me, if you just need something that like can store away when you're not using it, just wanting something to use at home, I think they're £139. I'd just be so much better than any, in fact less than that, £109. Just better than any 1 or 5 watt, because the only ones that spring to my mind are the Blackstar ones, and I'd much rather have a slightly bigger solid state amp.
Wow, fair enough. I mean, you know, I was always a sucker for the Marshall Class 5. I think it was a fantastic amplifier.
Again, you've got to turn it up quite loud. People forget how loud 5 watts actually is.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if they still do the Class 5. I think it is just the Origin 5, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, you'd have to buy an old one or buy the Origin. I've not heard the Origin. I assume it's good. The Class 5 to me stood out as being, you know, pretty fantastic.
I mean, the thing is I kind of agree with Matt. I think that 1 to 5 watts is, I mean, it's kind of neither here nor there, unless you're going for like, like the Vox AC4s I always thought were pretty good.
Oh, they were wonderful.
But again, you kind of needed to turn them up a little bit to get anything out of them. Same with, obviously this is a bit more money, but like, you know, 57 Champ or something like that, they're only, I don't know, 5 or 6 watts, something like that. And but again, you just need a, you need to get a bit of air through in order to make it sound good. I mean, I've been having a look at some options, because I think this is an area which generally was pretty underserved when we were working at
absolutely shop. I kind of feel like the Class 5 was like a the first 5 watt thing,
yeah,
probably,
I mean,
that I really knew about.
There was the Lionhearts, the Laney Lionhearts.
Oh, of course, yeah.
There was a 5 watt one of those.
Oh, of
the Cub, if you wanted something a bit cheaper. There were
watts,
a number of those kind of high spec Marshalls. They did the like JCM in a 1 watt and a 5 watt, and like a
they did
JTM
the Slash amp, didn't they, as well?
What's that, sorry?
They did the Slash in a 5 watt,
yes,
didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But actually, I've just been having a look to see what other options there are, you know, newer options. And these, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Milkman,
yeah,
small amps. So these look like they're fairly new. I don't think I've seen these, although I vaguely
remember
us talking
about
them.
They do a little 1 watt one.
Yeah,
they?
The 1 watt plus, which looks pricey. Really nice. It's got, I think that's an Alnico Blue in it. Oh, no, it's a, says it's a greenback, but that is definitely blue, so I'm not sure. That looks really nice. And Tone King do some 5 watt amps as well. But I mean, the thing is that I think those amps they do something very, very specific. And you know, the sound that you're gonna get out of that is like, it's gonna be kind of like crunchy blues.
Yeah.
And if you want something a bit more dynamic, I just think there's so many options for like attenuated amps, digital amps, whether you're looking at a Katana or, you know, like the Tone Masters, I think are a great option for that. That would be the way that I would go, rather than going down the route of to like really stick with something that's like absolutely foul. I think especially at the moment, I think people have just got to work within their limitations. And, you know, if you live in an inner city, you're going to get a better sound from better is obviously very subjective, but like for me I would much rather have something that was kind of simulating a valve sound. If I can't get a proper valve sound at a proper volume, you know, I've got a Princeton here, which I barely get the chance to turn up, because it's like I live in a crowded street, and it's you know, my girlfriend works in the, like, I'm upstairs and she works in the room directly below me. So like, even during the day, I can't really turn it up because she's on the phone most of the time. So we've all got our limitations. And I think it's that there's some great options out there for people who want to have that kind of simulator.
Go on, Matt.
I was going to say that Milkman 1 watt plus is actually 10 watts. It's just called it's called the 1 watt plus. But yeah, I mean, great.
Oh yeah. But so it is.
No, the reason I was saying was obviously if that's within your budget, coming in at a standard price, obviously there's a bunch of other options. Combo is $15,999.
Oh no, but it's got an attenuator.
It has.
So the Milkman is, it's got volume, treble, bass, and then an attenuator on the front, which is interesting. So presumably it goes 1 watt to onboard power scaling drops the amp from 10 watts down to 1 watt. I think this looks great. I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah, that is a super cool product, obviously with a price tag attached.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's Milkman, and it's definitely gonna be a budget option, but I think it looks great.
Also, Jay, you said AC4, and then that reminded me that at one point I owned a Vox AC4.
Did you?
I don't know if you remember. I owned
which version?
Oh,
do you have the hand-wired version?
I only owned. You've probably forgotten this, and I'd forgotten until I just saw a picture of it, and then I've seen the price that one's selling for, and I'm dying inside. I owned an original
covered
1960s Vox AC4.
Of course you did.
Wait. Yeah, the original coloured, the early ones, the cream coloured ones.
Oh, so the ones when it was in the original TV housing before they made the housing the same as like the modern AC series.
No, I'd have to share a picture in the group, but looks like a mini AC30 basically.
Right, so
it's not
the original. Right, finish.
Okay. But yeah, basically 1961 by the looks of it. You know, if I wanted to pick one up now, I mean, I let that go for peanuts, probably for some other bit of crap.
You should have sold it for money at least.
Well, at the time, I don't think
traded it for some
peanuts were high in value because of their incredible salt content, and salt was a rare commodity at that point.
Right, I see.
They're selling now for over $2,000. So definitely lost out.
That is awful.
I mean, I sold it like 10
two
years
grand,
ago.
Sorry, 2 grand.
2 grand.
Good Lord.
And I mean, it did
work.
Man,
you're an influencer. If you weren't before, you certainly are now.
I know, man. Oh, God. I missed that amp. It did sound good. I can't remember what I sold it for. And I don't even want to know because it was probably something that I still don't own to this day. So
Matt.
I know. Never sell anything. That's the lesson of life.
That's it. Never sell anything. Yeah, I think, you know, coming back to the amp thing, the 105 watt amp, yes, you know, I do think things like the Katana and the Fender GTs are both absolutely extremely wonderful options. The Katana just for simplicity and incredible tone. I love the foot switch you can get with the Katana. I think it opens up so just an incredible, if you can plug that thing into a computer, the amount of options that, you know, are now accessible to you via the Katana. I don't need to go on about it again on the podcast, but it's very good. And if you want something that's small, compact, and compact and does a fantastic job of like clean Fender amps, then I think the GT, what's the smallest one? The GT40? Is that right?
Fender.
The Fender GT40. Is that the smallest one? For wonderful headroomy sort of Fender tones, some of the, because of course all the, on the GT1000, there are, all the presets are based on existing Fender amplifiers or legendary Fender amplifiers, and there are some wonderful tones on there. So they're very good. But, you know, yes, if you want to go valve, I don't know if I agree with you guys. I think like low wattage amps sound fantastic at home.
You were just talking about the fact that you've been annoying your neighbours.
Well, yes, that was with a 15-watt Fender amp. But, you know, at the moment, I've got, you know, I guess a slight plug. I've got an Ashdown AGM5.
Here we go.
For goodness sake. You guys do it all the time. I've got this Ashdown AGM5 here, which is their 5-watt all valve guitar amp, and that has a stealth mode which brings everything down to like a quarter of a watt, which I still think sound, I actually don't use it because I quite like the headroom, you know, as Matt says, but you know, I've found it to be very good. I still think the Marshall Class 5 is the best sort of little amplifier I've ever had. I haven't sold my one of those either. They were extremely good for a sort of, you know, being able to get a little bit of grit out of your home valve rig. And especially if you want something that looks good, the Class 5s just, you know, they looked absolutely fantastic. Now we should get one more question in before we go. So Jay and Matt, we can have Paul's question or Dan's question. Which one would you like?
I'm not even looking at the questions.
No, that's
so
okay.
You just
that's okay.
Throw them at me.
No, that's all right.
Yeah, you go, Joe. Pick your poison.
Paul Cowell says, are old guitars worth it or should I buy modern built relics instead?
Oh, that's a can of worms.
It really is. I mean, do we need to tell the story about Matt's 71 Telly Standard again?
I was going to say I hate vintage guitars, which is a lie. that's not true. I think, I mean, Joe, you said something earlier. I think, you know, I can't remember what it was related to, but about playing it, and if it sounds good, it sounds good, and if it, you know, if it feels good, it feels good. I think the problem is what's classed as a vintage guitar now is much wider.
2004.
30 years.
Yeah, I've got this vintage 2004 Les Paul Studio in Wine Red with gold hardware.
I mean, it's scary that people are going, I've got this vintage. I mean, you know, I've got an 88 Strat. It's like, it's vintage. It's, you know, it's like, what? Really?
Nobody listening to this podcast was born after 1988. So yeah. I don't think that counts as vintage.
I think it depends. I think it really depends. I think if you're going to go down real vintage, like if you're like, right, I'm going to buy a Strat. Do I buy an original 60 Strat or a custom shop 60 Strat? I mean, the first thing is obviously if you can afford an original one.
Well,
then
yes. I think you apply that to Fender or Gibson. And yes, the price of vintage guitars is astronomical. But outside of those two brands, the vintage guitars are as affordable as a modern guitar.
But I think, you know, if he's saying relic one, I'm guessing he's probably looking down the Fender or Gibson.
Sure.
I think, you know, if you're looking outside those two brands, there are things like Tysco or, you know, old Ibanez or similar that you just...
Yeah,
you
Harmony.
No, you definitely want to stay away from any, Hofner, any 80s Japanese stuff. You definitely want to stay away from
yeah,
don't want to go anywhere near any of that sort of stuff.
Just send it to me and I will take care of it. Send it to Joe. I think there is stuff. I think, if you're looking down the Fender or Gibson route, obviously if you can afford the original, I think you have to hunt a little bit more to find a good one.
Why is that? Why is that?
Because people messed around with them. So, I mean, I've watched so many videos recently of like people who had a Strat, who bought a Strat in the 80s because it was to a 20-year-old guitar and then just like did all the stuff that people were doing to it in the 80s. Like Van Halen's, like, yeah, I'm going to put a Kayla speed loader on it. And
Kayla trim was exactly what I was thinking.
And, you know, and a humbucker. And then I'm going to, you know, and it's like, well, you know, and so you get a lot of stuff that's like non-original stuff needed refrets. And, you know, if you...
I don't think that's necessarily a problem, though. As long as you're like not paying through the nose for something like that. That's the thing. Like, as long as if you're getting a vintage guitar that has, you know, because you see them sometimes that have been turned into Frankensteins and then they've been turned back into, you know, relatively traditional Strats or whatever. And I think as long as you're not paying mint money for a guitar that's clearly been hacked about, I think that's fine. If you want something that's like, oh, this is a 60 Strat, but I tell you what, it was an 80 Strat for a while. You know, I think that's fine as long as you're not paying 20 grand for it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I think if you play it and you like it, then good. Just don't buy it for the wrong reasons. Don't buy it because you think... I guess that what I'm saying is don't buy a vintage guitar because it's a vintage guitar and you think it's going to make you loads of money. Because you should be buying a guitar that you want to sit down and play.
Yeah.
And not necessarily... care about. You want to play it and enjoy it. And if you're buying, I'm going to buy this 1959 ES175, you know, because it's slightly more affordable than a 59 Les Paul, and I'm going to sit on it and I'm never going to play it, then is that what you really want? If so, then great, but the guitar won't be as good hung on the wall as it will be actually played. So I think you need to be buying it for the right reasons. If you want a real workhorse, you might be better off with a mod guitar.
What you're saying is if you've got the opportunity to buy a 1972 Telecaster Standard, but you've got to sell your dream one pickup Esquire in Taos Turquoise or whatever ridiculous colour that it was, and there was only four made of ever, and it was your dream guitar and you managed to get one against all the odds, but you've got to sell that in order to get the 72 Tele, you should do it or shouldn't do it. Sorry, I'm a little bit
definitely,
confused there,
definitely, definitely. Do not sell your dream guitar.
That would be a mistake.
Yes.
I think I bet I would have liked that 70s. I mean, 70s has always been a contentious time period for
Fender as well. You know, that's what Matty's saying with regards to like, and I think that's the case with a lot of this stuff is if the kind of, you know, 2000s onwards has brought anything, it's certainly stability. And, you know, I think that's...
Stability of quality, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that by and large, you know that if you're buying a 2012 American Standard Strat, it's going to be great. And likewise, if you're buying a custom shop Les Paul from 2015, it's going to be really good. So you don't need to worry too much about it. But if you're going to be buying a 1973 Jaguar without trying it,
yeah,
maybe you want to like think a little bit more about that. You know, that's kind of where I am with it.
I definitely agree. I think what you have to kind of think about and decide is what's important to you as a player.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's viable playability, because a lot of the time with vintage guitars, yeah, you are, you know, there are going to be things with them. And for me, like I really love those things. So I think that gives the guitars character and vibe. Like my 1969 precision bass, which is my favorite thing to play, and is the only bass that sits on its own stand in my room and I pick up as my thing that I go to all the time. You can't play that really above the 13th or 14th fret because there's a twist in the neck, so you don't have any notes above that.
Right.
So it's kind of not that that's a really an area that I use very often. But you know, that's not a fully functional guitar. in sort of, you know, any sense of the word, but I do think it sounds absolutely incredible. I do think there's a tone to it that's like nothing else I've picked up, and I think you get that sometimes with vintage guitars. If you love the sound of old records and things like that, then you know a lot of that is achieved on this sort of magical, mystical thing that was the instruments that were made at the time. So if that's the most important thing to you, then absolutely a vintage guitar. If you're looking for something reliable, I think that's a different, you know, there's a reason I don't gig the 69 P bass. I did when I bought it. It came to one gig and you know I hit it too hard and like the low, you know, D string for me, or the low string came out of the nut because I play sort of a heavy gauge string and I didn't want to change the vintage nut that's there, you know. And I spent half the gig having to yank the string back over into, you know, into place and things like that. So it's sounds incredible, just absolutely not something that's going to be incredibly reliable.
Yeah,
I think that's my takeaway for vintage stuff versus modern stuff. But yes, that actually brings us up to time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So we're going to be continuing over on our Patreon on patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're going to continue on the questions function. We've got some other good questions. Matt, you've got a question coming up all about pedal boards and Schmidt array.
Is pink the best color?
That's one of the questions. Jay, you've got a wonderful question about Les Paul Juniors.
Okay.
You know, it's going to be great. There's a question about bluegrass bands for you, Jay, as well. That's going to be good.
Yeah, my favourite type of grass.
Exactly. Anyway, dear listener, you can, of course, join us over on Patreon. You can become a Patreon supporter of Guitarnerds for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month will get you this regular episode ad-free and early every week. And at the $5 tier, you get access to our Patreon-specific episode plus the entire back catalogue of Guitar Nerds episodes. And at the $10 tier, you get all of those things plus you get your name sung in a lovely song at the end of each week's episode. You can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds and join us on our Facebook at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang. Bye.
Ty Allen, Yogi, the guitarist, Modius, Carl Harris, Cloudlifter, and Todd Simons, Rich Quezel, Joe Harper, John Hughes, and Michael Howe, Brian Hansen, Shane Am, and Jeffrey Wax, and Eric Hammer, Samuel Frost, and Brian Einsler, Gavin Vander Linden, and Jacob McGee, Andy Manley, Scott Utting, Robert Butterworth, Simon Milbourne, and Marcus Alkowacki. And guitar nerds, that's why they're the Guitar Nerds, ooh yeah!
Johnson and Neil Milton, Christian Lum Hansen, Nick Willett and Keith Adams, Michael McVay, Eric File, Andrew Good and Joe Patek, Mary Peters, Richard Serbuk, Jack Moore and Ken Sayers, Adrian Day and Abe Matthews, Sean Harper and John Anglin and Rob Gould, Tucker Ramadan and Ernie Cooper, Russ Edwards and Nate Naked, Stephen Buck and Aaron Sherman, Matt Bellamy, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Wilde, Christopher Loseth, and Hans Ams, Eric Rich, Rob Novick, Steve Merville, David E. Short, Robert Smith, and Rand Page, Andy McKenzie, and Scott O'Brien, and Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, and Moon Gravett. The Guitar Nerds! The Guitar Nerds! Oh, the Guitar Nerds!
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.